Are you also tired of one-size-fits-all weight loss plans? Meet Noom, the personalized solution that meets you where you are. Noom is able to understand your unique needs, from dietary restrictions to medical concerns. Unlike restrictive programs, Noom embraces your lifestyle and choices. Discover a sustainable approach to weight loss, tailored just for you. Honestly, Noom felt like it was made for me. It's not just about what I eat. It's about understanding why. With Noom, I've learned so much about myself and built healthier habits that stick. It's all about progress, not perfection. Say goodbye to restrictive diets and experience the Noom app for yourself with personalized lessons and expert coaching. Noom's psychology and biology-based approach has helped over 5.2 million people achieve their goals. Stay focused on what's important to you with Noom's psychology and biology-based approach. Sign up for your trial today at Noom.com. That's Noom.com. And check out Noom's first ever cookbook, The Noom Kitchen, for 100 healthy and delicious recipes to promote better living. Available to buy now wherever books are sold.
It's time once again for Dueling Reviews. I'm Stephen Schleicher, and we're so glad that you could download this episode. That means you have internet. Right?
which means you may be doing better than us tonight.
That's Matthew Peterson. Hey, Matthew, what's going on, man?
Oh, nothing much. My usual Wednesday shmageggy. Although I did discover something important today.
Which is? Don't send naked pictures of yourself on the internet?
Well, I've always known that. No, this is important. If you have a job that normally takes four people and one fat guy is the only one who shows up, it makes the job much more interesting.
Well, your day certainly goes faster because you don't have any downtime. So that perceived watch pot never boils.
The watch boil is never potted.
Yeah, that goes into effect. And so your day just goes by. You look up and it's 4 o'clock and you're like, hey, it's time to go home and do a review of The Names Number One from Vertigo Comics. Why don't you give us a rundown, Matthew?
All right. The Names Number One from Vertigo Comics actually starts with a particularly distressing scene of a gentleman being forced to write his own suicide note,
Matthew,
and throw himself out a window.
Write your suicide note. We've already doctored up all of your medical records. Right.
Depressed.
Write down, Matthew. You say, Matthew, I cannot take this anymore. I'm sorry. You're the champ. You're the Mona Lisa. Now jump out the window.
Yeah, essentially that. And then, of course, the story turns to his very young, beautiful wife, who doesn't believe for a second that her husband actually killed himself out of depression. And apparently she's going to be our hero of our piece. And throughout the second half of the issue, she's trying to figure out exactly what's going on, including some fighty-fighty. And a particularly weird scene where a guy shows up at her house. She doesn't trust him. They get in a fight. Then she puts on a dress and tries to seduce him and then stabs him in the neck.
Well, because he stole her husband's cell phone video recorder thingy and she wants it back. So, yeah. I don't know where to begin with this, because on the one hand, I like this concept. Woman finds out that there's some society or some secret organization that possibly killed her husband, and her autistic stepson may have a thing for her, and she's trying to figure out what's going on. On the other hand, this issue, I don't know if it's because the story was so rushed, but it just felt like a mess to me.
It does move at quite a clip, and it opens in the middle of a scene with a sequence that is very, very off-putting, and that can throw you. I think that there are a few things that do feel like they're glossed over, whether or not the son has a crush on his stepmother.
Well, yeah, I mean, she would be the stepmother. He's got
pictures. She's married to her husband. Yeah. Well, and I mean, you know, we've all been there. Well, not literally. I mean, never mind. Anyway, you have the moments that go through here that don't make sense, that I think may make sense later, because of course there's bits with the guy who forces him to jump out a window, who is called the surgeon. And the surgeon back at evil people headquarters talking about evil people things that evil people do. And there's something going on with the son being a math genius or some sort of geniusy genius. So, yeah, I can definitely agree with you. It feels like this is the pacing feels kind of rushy to me.
It's too rushed. There's hardly any character development. We don't know what anybody's story is, especially our heroine. And if we don't know more about her story, if we don't know why she's here, why she's doing what she's doing, it doesn't make a whole lot of sense. And then, of course, because we're taking a week, 2 weeks of story and we're compressing it into a single issue, and the transition between scenes is very jarring.
There really isn't a transition. We just a scene ends, next scene, a scene ends, next scene. I mean,
and we're not given any context to time passing or anything like that.
Right. And that I don't know if that's representative of the writer's style. I mean, Pete Milligan has done some pretty outre stuff. He did Shade the Last Man. He did a book called Screamer. He's done things where you go through, like, especially his work on Ecstatics.
Yeah.
Where you are told the story and then the next issue tells that same story or parts of that story you didn't know. And it makes more sense that way. Or there's, you know, there are additional things that we didn't see that we may see down the line. I think that overall, what they did successfully, they established a reason to like our protagonist. It gives us an impressively, you know, kind of almost superhero-y female protagonist in that she's a kickboxing instructor or something.
Yeah.
And, you know, throughout the whole thing, she is kind of the driving force. And, you know,
it's clear that she's the central character, and I don't have a problem with that. I really don't. But when we don't know what her background is, just give us something that, you know, is she a kickboxing champion? Does she compete nationally? Is she just someone that goes to yoga class and gets a little bit too chummy with her kickboxing student or instructor? You know, a day or two after his death, this money scandal thing that's going on, the controlling of different people throughout the world. I like that idea. I'm sure the son is going to play a big role in this as the story goes forward.
Yes.
But again, it just feels like we are smashing everything together in such a, issue one should have ended with the, person that she told that she was told to stay away from or be aware of, Marco. That's when he came to the door. That's where issue one should have ended.
Yeah.
With Marco at the door and her going, oh crap. And then going into the stuff that happened. But because everything is crammed into two pages, it happens so quickly that she's like, oh yes, I'm going to let you in, even though my dead husband said to be aware of you, and you're going to try to put the moves on me, and I'm going to find an excuse to get you out of the house, and then realize you took my mobile device, and then in a page and a half later, I'm going to have a knife sticking out your neck.
Yep.
Just seems so forced.
And I kind of wonder, though, if the issue had ended on that cliffhanger without anything really explained or really even, you know, hinted at as to what was happening with her husband and how she got into that situation or what, you know, Champion is all about. What are his last words? Don't forget me, Champion.
Yeah.
There's a mystery in there. But I think if we had cut there, it might have felt like there wasn't enough. So I think I think they were trying to give us a first issue with substance so that we didn't have a whole lot of things that were up in the air at the end. But I do agree with you. What ended up happening was pretty heavy, pretty fast.
Yeah. And then the whole, he comes on to her, doesn't necessarily try to rape her in her house, but definitely when she goes over to his house for dinner to get the device back, they get into some pretty big fisticuffs. And a boob pops out. I didn't even realize that until this third reading here. That's what's going on. Yeah, and then I was like, oh yeah, Vertigo book.
There's some sexual overtones. There's some violence. There's stuff that happens, and it does feel like a Vertigo book in the classic sense of 1990s weird Vertigo books, and that's cool.
I don't know. I mean, I really want to enjoy it, and from the concept standpoint, I think this is a really cool concept, but from the execution, I don't know. I don't know if I want to read the second issue.
Well, and that's the hard part about these books. I've noticed that with the type of storytelling that you'll see in these, what I call the classic Vertigo books, your Sandman, your Preacher, the books with this sort of serialized storytelling, they actually read better in a trade or a larger set. This is another example where I feel like that Japanese thing of 6 months, you get a big chunk rather than six smaller chunks might actually serve the story better.
Yeah, I've been kind of talking about that for a while. I think we both have, in that in some instances, maybe some of these publishers should just release this as a giant graphic novel. Arkea has done that in the past with, I think it was Rust, the boy robot thing. And then certainly a Mouse Guard is kind of released that way. It could be released as individual issues, but they generally collect that as a volume. Maybe that's what needs to happen here. You know, with everything that goes on in this book, this seems like something that would be right up my alley, right? I mean, it's got the espionage. It's not a capes and tights. It's got a strong female heroine. It's got murder. It has everything of a big heist caper murder mystery thing all wrapped up in one, which I would really totally go for. But somehow this just doesn't work for me.
Yeah. And, there are things about the art.
Well, that's what I was going to say. I was going to say the art does not help the cause.
Yeah, I think that. Well, and again, it's something that is designed to give us the kind of the Peter Chung thing that you see in maybe an Aeon Flux, where the villains are villainous and monstrous.
Well, yeah.
And, Katya is beautiful and Katya is built and Katya is sexy. And all the bad guys have hatchet faces that you could use to cut glass.
Well, they got rat faces. It's almost like if you look at the pages, especially the stuff that's taking place in Secret Evil Headquarters, Inc.
Evil Headquarters.
It's like everything is shot. Everything is captured with like a wide angle lens. And so when you go for a close up of the surgeon, he looks like a giant rat face with giant teeth and a great big nose. It's just really weird. It really is. That's the best I can say is it's so different. And yet it has all this potential. I don't know. If you're somebody that likes a Vertigo book, I wasn't a particular fan of the art. I can see kind of what they're doing because things like when you go and visit the stepson, things are a little bit more normal. The layout is a little bit more normal, even though he is supposedly abnormal. When you're in the Secret Evil Headquarters, everything's at a tilt. You're not using a standard comic page layout. I can appreciate it from that standpoint. If you're into this kind of stuff, I mean, if you're into the espionage, conspiracy theory stuff, I think this might be a story you will enjoy. Maybe what I need to do is maybe what we should do is read issue two and see if that makes things better. Because I remember there was a book from Boom Studio years and years ago when we were first doing the Major Spoilers podcast that three issues in and I was like, man, this series sucks. But in the last two issues, they tied it all together and it made sense. And it was definitely a read it in the trade version. I am trying to see. I'm trying to see if this is a mini series. I can't see if this is a supposed to be a six issue, a four issue, or if this is an ongoing.
I don't know.
Digital copies don't have inside front covers, unfortunately.
Right.
So it's hard to see if this is like a one of six kind of thing.
I had thought that it was an ongoing. Hang on, Peter Milligan. Vamp for time. Quick, tell everybody about your new haircut.
I didn't get a new haircut. Well, I mean, what we have here, this is up on the website for Vertigo. And
it just says number one.
It just says number one, buy it. It doesn't say if this is a limited series. Now, it is a 32-page book for $2.99, right, which is a pretty good deal, as opposed to a 28-page book for $2.99. So you got that going for you.
Yeah, which is nice, you know.
Yeah. You got that going for you. But, yeah, I don't see anything about, let's see, here it is. Here's another one. It announces the name. It's a dark contemporary thriller set in the world of big money, hedge funds, leverage buyouts, market raids, flash crashes,
all right,
high-end finance.
Big money hedge fund. Oh, yeah.
Also here, it doesn't say whether it is a limited or an ongoing. No, it's an eight-issue. It's an eight-issue miniseries.
Okay. If it goes super, super well and it sells like gangbusters, I imagine it will become an ongoing. But, yeah. I can definitely see that. I think I'd be willing to give it eight issues based on number one.
I'm going to.
I don't know. I mean, it's something where the strength of the main character is why I want to come back. And you know, part of that is that, well, you know, she's the only pretty one in the book, but it's also something where I'm interested in seeing what she does with the information and how or whether she's able to deal with these, you know, monsters in power. So
she is the only female in this book. There are no other females represented. And you know, there are at least five pages where she's wearing a slinky dress. A couple of pages of the stepson with pictures of her in bikinis and whatnot.
Yeah.
I mean, from that standpoint, it's a little troubling that there are no other female characters in here. Now, maybe some more will be introduced.
Mm-hmm.
Well, no, I take that back. There is a female detective that's in the autopsy room, but she's on panel for like five panels, and that's it. I'll come back and I'll read issue two. And if it makes this story a little tighter, then I'll be great at it. The force part feels a little bit weird.
Yeah.
And especially the fight at the end just seems forced for no reason. Because the rat face guy said, let her live. So why would Marco suddenly flip the table and try to kill her?
Right. And what is Marco up to? And does Marco, you know, there are unanswered questions here. Knowing that it's an eight issue series to me actually might explain why it feels like there's two issues worth of material here.
No, if this were a four issue miniseries, I could understand this. Eight issues.
Well,
you could push this whole fight scene to issue two. Again, we don't know what's coming up, but I don't put it
this way. Let's say you're Pete Milligan and you have this cool ongoing story. And Vertigo says, we'll give you eight issues. And you're like, okay, how do I parse my cool ongoing story into an eight issue arc? I know. And you go through the whole thing with that.
But that gets really tiring very quickly. And in this case, the song you're singing is very staccato. And this book reads very staccato. It reads very choppy. And so I don't know. I'm not saying it's an awful book. I'm just saying I'm not completely sold on the first issue. The first issue did not knock it out of the park for me.
And I
want to be blown away by a first issue. I want to finish that first issue. And I want to say, oh, this is awesome. I want to read the next issue. I want to see where this story is going. This one had me kind of scratching my head going, well, maybe, I don't know. If this were a television series, I would not be coming back next week to see part two.
I will be coming back next week for part two, but I'm not promising to stick with the show forever.
Yeah.
I mean, I watched Agent of S.H.I.E.L.D. for those first eight episodes, and God knows those were some dull drudgery.
I only think I hit originally two episodes, and then I dropped it. And then right towards about 3 weeks before the end of the season, everyone's like, oh, you gotta watch them all and get caught up before the season finale. And I did. And it was fine watching it in that giant, large chunk. But
yeah,
week to week,
chunks.
No way.
Yeah, week to week is always tough.
Well, I hope the book sells well. I hope it at least makes it to issue eight, which I'm sure Vertigo is already committed to, because they've already advertised it as an eight-issue series. I hope that it reads better in the second issue.
I agree.
All right. What else is going on in the world this week?
Of the comic books? Well, Wolverine's croaking it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. What about Dwayne The Rock Johnson going to play Black Adam? That's not a surprise, right? I mean,
no,
because every time people were talking about a Shazam movie, they've been like ever since 52, the weekly series. Everyone's like, oh, yeah, Dwayne Johnson would make a great Black Adam. Especially when he shaved his head.
Yeah, I kind of wanted to see him as Captain Marvel. And that's simply because I think it would be awesome if we would commit to a non-white Captain Marvel. But that's just my expectation. As Black Adam, now you're going to have somebody really impressive as Captain Marvel.
Man, it's too bad they can't dig up the body of Jim McMurray. Or what's his name?
Fred McMurray was never really built like him. I mean, you could put his head on somebody else.
That's who Shazam was modeled after. Which is weird.
You could have Galifianakis be Captain Marvel.
Let's see. Who would be a good Captain Marvel? Who's got a big kind of broad chest? Mm-hmm. You know, it's too bad Brandon Routh just kind of tanked Superman, because he kind of had that look that would go with a Shazam. I think it'd be interesting to see who they get as a Billy Batson.
Yeah, you need a really, you know, awesome kid to be Billy Batson.
I wonder if they could get Patrick Stewart to be the Wizard.
Ooh, that would be cool. Patrick Stewart and Sir Ian McKellen together as a two-headed Shazam.
I don't know if they could do that with the whole X-Men
know if he can act necessarily.
Patrick Stewart?
No, not Patrick Stewart. My suggestion for who might be able to pull off Captain Marvel
dead.
Body type. Randy Orton.
Oh,
might.
The other wrestler. That would be an interesting thing.
Well, and Randy Orton is someone who's comparable to Dwayne Johnson in size and build and everything. But
you know who's got
the
look.
I don't know if Orton can act.
You know who's got the look and who can act, but too bad everybody hates him. Adam Carolla. Adam Carolla would be a perfect Shazam, Captain Marvel.
Did you say, what is he, 45?
Yeah, he's our age. He's only a year older than we are.
But if you
look at Adam Carolla's face now, go look him up. He's got the face of Captain Marvel.
He looks
he's
drawn by C.C. Beck in 1941.
He's got the kind of the curly hair. He's got the square jaw. He's got the attitude.
Squinty eye.
Got the squinty eyes of Captain Marvel. But too bad everyone in Hollywood hates him, or he would be a perfect person. He did a great boxing movie called The Hammer, which is really good. He's doing a documentary right now on Paul Newman, which should be out anytime, which everybody has said is awesome. I think he would be a really good Captain Marvel. I know people are going to jump all over me and say, no, he's a terrible choice. But he's got that look and he can act. So, interesting.
Yeah, I wouldn't hate that. Adam Goldberg.
I don't know who Adam Goldberg is.
He played the Hebrew Hammer. He would be an interesting and completely inexplicable Captain.
Yeah,
Marvel.
No, that wouldn't. No, no, I know who you're talking about. No, he wouldn't work. You know, if he could get his act together, Will Ferrell.
See, and again, I think that they're gonna want to cast younger. Will Ferrell's in his 40s too, but
I mean, what's more different and dynamic?
Dave Franco. You get your Dave Franco in there. Or, I don't know, Tobey Maguire.
No, I think it's got to be somebody older, because if it's going to be something that is, here's a kid in an old man or in an older body, you got to jump more than 10 years. You got to jump 20, 25 years, 30 years from the age of your kid to really spin on stuff.
Chuck Norris, 81 years old, in the eyes of a ranger.
God, I wonder who else would be a good, who should play... Should play Shazam. Let's see what the internet is saying today. Now that's not a bad choice. Magic Mike. That's not a bad choice at all. I like Magic Mike, Channing Tatum. That would actually be a pretty good choice right there.
Well, and they did work together in G.I. Joe Recalibration.
Oh, and they also, have you seen that, the frick is that movie that Dwayne Johnson was in? Not too long ago, with
Marky Mark.
Yes,
Pain and Gain. Hate that movie.
Did you watch
it? Terrible.
Did you watch it?
It's a terrible movie.
But for Johnson, that was great acting. I really loved his acting in that. It was really, really good.
I can't remember if it was Get Shorty, but there's something where he's playing. He's playing Camp Gay, and he's really kind of subtle about it, which is not something you'd expect when you're talking about a man called The Rock playing gay.
Well, wasn't he gay in Pain and Gain? Or wasn't he?
Yeah, I can see he wasn't too.
Or I forget what the whole hang up was in there, but I just found his performance in that movie was really, really good, even though the story was ridiculous.
Now, is he in that last Fast and the Furious movie with Vin Diesel?
He's in Fast and Furious Supercharged. That's post-production. He is in Journey to the Center of the Earth 4, Journey 3, From the Earth to the Moon. He's in Fast and Furious 7.
Yeah. Is that the last one?
Yes. And then I guess, like I said, this Supercharged is a short that's in post-production. So Fast and Furious 7 is the one that they are getting ready to release.
Yeah, that's the one that Paul Walker passed away during the thing. Yeah.
Yep. And it's got Jason Statham, Vin Diesel, Michelle Rodriguez, Kurt Russell as Shazam.
Ooh. How old is Kurt Russell? 70?
I think 65, I think. He's getting up there. I mean, God, he was a kid star in the 1950s. How old is he? He was born in 1951. Okay, so he wasn't he was a child star in the 50s. 1958, 59. So how old does that make him?
But 59 was 60 years ago, so if he was 7 in 1959, he's probably 60.
Well, he was born in 51, so 2001 would be 50.
Well, the thing was 30 years ago, and he was a grown man then. So.
He was 62. Is how old
62. That's what we're going to say. 62, well, he did play, I guess, Sky High was 15 years ago now. So.
Oh, he was really good in Sky High. I like that.
Yeah, where he was playing basically Superman.
Yeah. Yeah.
What was his name? The Commander?
60.
Commander Stronghold?
Yeah. Let me see if I can find it. I've got his IMDb page up.
You've got it on your desktop.
Oh, yes, it's on my desktop. Steve Stronghold, The Commander.
The Commander! You know what they call him?
I hope they don't use Arnold Schwarzenegger or Sylvester Stallone as Shazam. And I say Shazam both. Because that's what, you know, that's what he's been legally changed to.
That's what they'll be calling him.
But I know want to call him Captain Marvel, and that's fine too.
I'm always going to call him Captain Marvel, but that's because his name has been Captain Marvel for 65 years. You know? Yeah.
I think Channing Tatum would be really good.
Channing Tatum.
You know, they started shooting Magic Mike 2 XL. Magic Mike XL.
Magic Mike XL.
With Steven Soderbergh being the director and cinematographer. So that should be interesting. Okay. Matthew doesn't want to talk about Magic Mike. Have you seen that movie?
I have.
It's got your wrestler
Kevin
friend
Nash
in it.
Kevin.
Yeah, he's pretty funny in that.
Yeah, I don't necessarily want to see him take off his shirt, but hey, you know.
It worked. I mean, that's another movie that people need to check out. Just for the spectacle of it, I guess, for the lack of a better word. Same way with Pain and Gain. It's a spectacle.
But it's a terrible, terrible, hateful movie about
torture. It is. Yeah, it's terrible. You know. These people, and it's based on a true story. And of course, the actors look nothing like the people they're portraying.
Well, of course not. They're actors.
Yeah, Dog Day Afternoon is about terrible people.
That's what actors do. They act.
Yes.
They act like they're going to act.
All right, let's see what's coming out next week from Dark Horse Comics. Abe Sabian, number 16. Dark Ages, number 2. Rodrigo reviewed that this week on the Major Spoilers podcast. Terminator Salvation Final Battle number 9?
Get to the chopper.
Whedon three-way one-shot. That's $1. I think that's three of Whedon stories. A Firefly, a Buffy, and an Angel story all wrapped into one issue for $1. That'd be good to get on board. DC Comics has Astro City number 15, and then all the Futures End stuff. Batgirl Futures End, Batman Futures End. Birds of Prey, Futures End. This is all the stories that take place 5 years in the future. And Max Headroom bounces around. Also, Batman Eternal number 23. Jason Inman has a really good editorial this week on Major Spoilers on why it took 21 issues to find out who the villain is in Batman Eternal.
Hmm.
Injustice Gods Among Us Year 2 number 11. Legends Dark Knight 100-page Super Spectacular is number 4. Justice League United, Futures End. Scooby-Doo, Where Are You? Number, 49. This week, Scooby-Doo Team-Ups features the Legion of Doom. In case you want
to see that.
Go pick that up.
I do love the Legion of Doom.
And this isn't like modern Legion of Doom. This is like Super Friends Legion of Doom from the 1970s. So you know that that's got to be awesome.
Lex Luthor in a purple turtleneck.
Yes, with the bandoliers around his chest. With the little 35mm film canister strapped on there.
Yeah, that's one of Stephen King's scariest stories, The Bandoliers.
I don't think so. I thought it was rather disappointing. Terrifying. I thought The Langoliers was rather disappointing.
It's a disappointing movie. It's a scary as hell story.
Wow, I don't know. I don't know. I have this thing with Stephen King where...
Are you sure you didn't watch The Langoustines, which was about small lobsters?
No.
Because that one's
I read the book and I watched the movie, and I didn't find any of them enjoyable. The thing was, here's the problem. Stephen King tells great tales up until it's time to wrap the story up, and then he doesn't know how to wrap the story up. And it's always disappointing.
I can see that.
IDW Publishing has Little Nemo, Return to Slumberland, number one. That gets a second printing. Mars Attacks Art Gallery, number one. Rogue Trooper, Last Man Standing trade paperback. Rot and Ruin, number one. Transformers Primacy, number two. Did you read the first one?
No. What's it about?
I don't know. Primacy.
Oh. Yeah, Primacy. You know that stuff that they use to clear your nose when you have blocked.
Yeah.
Primacy Mist.
Yep, exactly. Image Comics has Copperhead number one, East of West 15, Ghosted 13, Howtoons Reignition number two, Invincible 11-0-114. I was thought that said 11A. I was like, what the hell is 11A?
11-04. 11A. 11A.
Lazarus number 11. Morning Glories number 40. Mm-hmm. Sheltered number 11. Spread 1, 2, and 3.
Morning Glories is still going?
I haven't read that book. I haven't read that since maybe issue 20.
I want to say like issue 20 or 25 for me.
It's still very popular.
There you go.
Marvel Love Comics. The art is great. Isn't that Joe Isman that's doing that art, I think? Or who does the art?
Isma. Isma does covers, and the interiors are Frasim Bolhava. Sorry, we broke up there.
Nick Spencer? Oh, no, that's the writer.
Yeah, yep.
And Joe Isma, that's who does the main art. Alex Solazzo, and Johnny Lowe. Those are the people that are credited as the artists, but yeah. Sorry, I'm terrible at pronouncing people's names.
Yeah, you're terrible at English.
All New Ultimates, number 8. No, people's names are just different. Avengers, number 34.1.
34.1?
I know, we're starting to get those to pop up again.
Boy.
Have you ever read any of the Castle books? The Castle series that's based on the TV show?
My wife watches the show.
There's new trade paperback coming out next week. Calm Before the Storm.
Ooh, let's
Deadpool
read that.
Deadpool number 30. That's a whole trade paperback. Death of Wolverine number one poster. Wolverine number two.
Poster.
Edge of Spider-Verse. Has anyone claimed Edge of Spider-Verse number one?
Not yet.
We should do that.
Is that the one with Gwen Stacy Spider?
The series is. I don't know if she's appearing in that first issue.
Sure she is.
All right, then.
We just called it. It's totally going to happen.
Chris Wilson didn't get it. Miss Marvel number 8 comes out next week. Nightcrawler number 6. Powers Bureau number 11. Rocket Raccoon Young poster. That must be a Scotty Young poster.
No, it's actually a poster of immature age. It's a poster under 12.
What do we got in the rest? We've got Betty Page in Danger number 0 double feature pack. Battlestar, what is that? Oh, Battle Angel Alita Last Order. Black Market number 3. Caliban number 6.
Caliban!
Crossed
Caliban!
They're calling for you, Matthew. Crossed Wish You Were Here hardcover comes out next week. I know you're sighing in anticipation. Oh, I wish I could review Crossed. Dawn Vampirilla number 1. Dick's End of Time number 4. And to make it even better, they have an offensive cover variant. Doctor Who number 11, number 2. Let's see. Ghost Wolf number 4. Is that the one where they ride around in the helicopter?
Yeah, Ghost Wolf. Ernest Borgnine?
Yes.
John Michael Vincent? Yeah.
Hex number 2, Jennifer Blood, Born Again number 2. Lady Zorro number 3. Let's see. Magnus Robot Fighter number 6. Man Who Laughs, graphic novel.
Fighter.
Roy Thomas presents Sheena Queen Jungle, Queen of the Jungle, slipcase edition, volume 2.
Sheena Queen Jungle.
That's how it's listed is. Roy Thomas presents Sheena Queen Jungle, slipcase ed, volume 2, 70
bucks. Slipcase Ed, sell you Sheena Queen Jungle.
Shadow Year 1,
hi,
number 10.
Hi, everybody, I'm Slipcase Ed. Come on down to Slipcase Ed, Slipcase Emporium.
SpongeBob Comics, number 36. Holy crap.
SpongeBob Comics.
Ooh, here's a creepy one. I think this is coming out from Blue Water Productions. Spring-Heeled Jack hardcover. You know the story of Spring-Heeled Jack?
He's like, I do. It's terrifying.
It's a devil guy that runs around and kills newborn babies and stuff. Ugh, it's creepy. Tintin Young Reader Edition, Prisoners of Sun. And Tintin Young Reader Edition, Seven Crystal Balls. Tom Clancy, Splinter Cell Echoes number 3. Wasted number 57. And Wild's End number 1, all coming out next week. Those are just some of the comics coming out next week. But this, for us, oh, I'm excited. Edge of Spider-Verse. This is where it's interesting because, you know, DC Comics has multiversity, where the multiverse is slamming into each other. And now Marvel has a series where the multiverse slams into one another and all the Spider-Men from all the different multiverses team up.
Spider-Man. Moisha Spider-Man.
Yep. Gabriel Spider-Man.
Yeah. Oh, I love Gabriel Spider-Man.
Yeah.
Yeah. So his little sister.
Sherry.
Jane Spider-Man.
Oh, the other sister. Okay. Jane Spider-Man.
No, you're thinking of Lisa. Lisa's the cute one. Lisa Spider-Man. Yeah.
Anything else before we get out of here?
No.
All right, everybody, head over to majorspoilers.com. You can share your thoughts, the comments section of this particular episode. While you're over there, click on that Amazon.com link. Maybe you want to pre-order some of these comic books. You do it through our Amazon link over at majorspoilers.com. A little bit comes back our way and allows us to do more week after week after week. If you appreciate everything that Major Spoilers does, maybe you want to help us out by becoming a VIP member, members.majorspoilers.com. You can find out all of the information over there, including the phase 2 goals that we have going on. One of them's already been unlocked. Finally Friday, our new show that we do on Fridays, it's unlocked. Good news for fans of Finally Friday, we don't have to cut that show off early because my son's soccer practice doesn't start until 5:30. So we got plenty of time to hang out and have fun on Fridays. But we've got early critical hit releases. Once we reach a certain goal, we've got a new game-based podcast that's coming up, as well as our audio drama podcast. Pretty excited about that. It's all over at members.majorspoilers.com is our way of saying thank you for helping us make more entertainment for you.
Yay!
All right, you can find Matthew at Mighty King Cobra. You can find me at Major Spoilers. And until next time, keep reading comics. We know we will.
Here's hoping all your reviews are dueling reviews.
Major Spoilers is copyright 2014.
And now another no-brainer money-saving tip from Progressive.
Marcus, what happened?
I was changing my oil and I spilled some on the floor.
Oh, well, use these $50 bills to wipe it up.
Perfect. Got any more?
Yeah, take a couple hundred.
Stop. Instead of using money, use an old rag. And here's a better tip from Progressive on how not to waste money. Don't pay too much for car insurance. Drivers who switch and save could save hundreds. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Potential savings will vary.
The first taste of rare bourbon you finally got your hands on. That's nice. At Caskers.com, we make this experience easy. Caskers is a one-stop spirit curator with an impressive selection of exclusive, sought-after, rare, and household names in the realm of premium spirits and champagne. Discover the top flavors of the year now by going to Caskers.com and using code WELCOME10 for $10 off your first purchase. Get $10 off your first purchase with code WELCOME10 at Caskers.com.